Greetings, all you 99 percenters. This is your host, Dr. Jack Rasmus. This is Alternative Visions. Okay, today the topic is what's going on here with the economy at year end and the related so-called stimulus negotiations in Congress. What's holding that up? What are the positions of the different parties to the negotiations? It's getting rather Byzantine now, with multiple offers from different segments or fractions of the left and right, liberals, congressmen, Democrats, Republicans, etc. Okay, what's happening with the negotiations and what's happening with the real economy at the same time? And, you know, there's really two real economies going on here. There are the wealthy investors and their stock market and financial markets that are booming, never before as much. And then there's the rest of us. You know, I mean, the digression between these two economies is growing more and more absurd and greater with every passing day. We've had records, 50-plus record highs in both the Dow and the NASDAQ, and probably the S&P as well, the three major markets, right? More and more money is being made in financial assets. There was a report that just came out this past week from Americans for Tax Fairness, who reported that 651 billionaires in the U.S. increased their wealth since March by over $1 trillion. You know, going into the COVID crisis, they were collectively 650 billionaires, had aggregate wealth of $3 trillion. Now they've got more than $4 trillion, a 25% increase in just 8 months, and is going further. And the rest of us, well, we all know what's happening to the rest of us, don't we? Well, let's talk about the rest of us. Well, first of all, let's look at jobs. Oh, pretty disastrous. On Thursday, first-time unemployment initial claims, in other words, people who were unemployed for the first time filing for unemployment benefits, went up by 280,000 over the previous week. Yeah. Now, remember, as I've said on this show, there are two unemployment benefit programs. One is the normal traditional program through the states that administer it. That's the one that's always existed. And then with the COVID thing, they established another federal unemployment benefits program called the Pandemic Unemployed Assistance Program, the PUA. That is for the first time to finally provide benefits for gig workers, freelancers, independent contractors, you know, as workers who heretofore were never eligible for it. Yeah. You know, gig work is, let me digress here, gig work is very beneficial to the employers, right? They don't have to pay taxes. They make the workers pay taxes. They make the workers use their own capital, whether it's an automobile or their home or whatever. Mm-hmm. They don't pay benefits of any kind, et cetera. It's very profitable. That's why you see these IPOs, stock issuances for these gig companies are going through the roof, because they know these guys are profitable to the obscene. Yeah, that's why all the investors are throwing money at it, you know. DoorDash just happened, right? Uber, B&B, whatever. They're all going public. And all the big money bags are throwing their money into these guys because they know they are super profitable. Gig work is super profitable. Okay, so we have this temporary program to return to jobs and benefits. This temporary program called the PUA, Pandemic Unemployment Assistance, that gig workers for the first time can apply for. Yeah, well, it expires here in a couple more weeks. 12 million people on that emergency unemployment benefit expires They have nothing after December 26th. Well, let's go back to the new claims. You know, the regular statewide unemployment benefit system, we had an increase of 141,000 new filers in 1 week. 2 weeks ago, it was 712,000 new filers. Last week, these figures that came out on Thursday, 853,000, up 141,000. At the same time, the percentage increase for the gig workers, freelancers, contractors, PUA benefits system, rose even more percentage-wise. 2 weeks ago, it was 288,000. Last week, it was 427,000. In other words, 139,000 more. 2 weeks ago, the total between the two, the state and the PUA, was 1 million new filings for unemployment benefits. Last week, 1.28 million new filings, an increase of the 280,000, or 28% in 1 week. Well, you know, you like percentages? Compare that to how much the billionaires made off of COVID, 25% increase. Yeah. Okay, that's the reality of new benefits, new filings for unemployment benefits. But that's just a part of the picture, part of the picture. What's going on here? We've got over 20 million people on benefits, unemployment benefits, 20.5 million people just on benefits. Well, wait a minute. You know, the government says, and all the media is pumping out, and even liberal economists are parroting, well, we only have 6.7% unemployed, and that means about 10 million unemployed. Well, how the hell can that be when you got 20 million on benefits? How can you have only 10 million unemployed when 20 million are on benefits? And, of course, we know that there are more people without jobs that aren't getting benefits. In fact, here's a statistic that you almost never see reported. While we are adding over a million people filing for new benefits every week now, 1.28 million, there are a million people who are exhausting their benefits, you know, falling off the truck on the back end as we load up the truck of new unemployees on the front end. Yeah, a million a week. Well, you got to add those who were on benefits who no longer are on benefits because they've exhausted them to the 20 million who are still on benefits. Well, you can see a picture of how many those are, those without or exhausting their benefits but still jobless. By looking at another statistic called the labor force participation rate, 3.9 million people dropped out of the labor force since February. 3.9 million. Well, they're without jobs, but they're not considered unemployed, according to the U.S. government. They've given up looking for work. They've dropped out of the labor force. And you've got to be out of work and looking for work in the last 4 weeks to be considered unemployed by the government, whether you're getting benefits or not. Now, we can add other groups to this number. You know, 20 million on benefits, 3.9 million dropped out. There's at least 1 to 2 million people, according to some statistics I said. No one knows, you know, accurately how many, of two-paycheck parents. One has to drop out in order to, you know, maintain the remote education for their K through six kids, little kids. You know, maybe high schoolers, you don't have to quit work in order to oversee the education. But when you've got little ones, somebody's got to stand by and watch them and set them up and so forth. I mean, first of all, that remote learning is an absolute disaster going on. Absolute disaster. But You know, that's what it is. And we've got about 1.3 million from stats I've seen of usually the moms who've had to quit their jobs and stay home. Well, if you quit a job, you're not considered unemployed because you got to be actively looking for work. Well, if you quit and you're taking care of your kids' education, you're not looking for work. Well, you're not unemployed. You fall into this category of the government called the missing labor force. Yeah. And there's another problem here, too, that underestimates the total unemployed. Another problem. It's called the furloughed worker. You know, when COVID occurred, when it hit in March, you had a lot of companies who told their employees, don't come to work. In other words, you are unemployed, right? But you have an expectation of return, maybe. It's temporary, right? You're unemployed. You're temporarily unemployed. You have an expectation of coming back to work. Well, back in March, April, the U.S. Labor Department, when it surveys people to determine the unemployment rate and so forth, asks those employees who were temporarily furloughed, are you still working? And the employees said, well, yeah, I'm still employed with this company. I'm just furloughed. Well, what the Labor Department did was to assume that they had a job. Wait a minute. They weren't getting paid. They were furloughed. Oh, but because they said in the Labor Department survey, oh, yeah, I'm working. I'm still with this company. They counted that as employed. You know, and that was revealed, and the Labor Department admitted they made a mistake in that, but you know what? They've never corrected it. Ever since March, April, they still haven't corrected that. So you got all these workers who are furloughed by their company who aren't considered unemployed. Now, I don't know what the number of those are, but it's probably pretty significant. You got to add that to the workers who had to quit to take care of their kids' remote education, to those who had dropped out, to those 20 million who are still on benefits. Look, if you add these all together, what you get is 25 million minimum people who are still unemployed for various reasons, on benefits or not on benefits for these other reasons. Right? That's like 17-18% of the labor force, not the official reported 6.7%. You know, the government accounting office, which is kind of like the watchdog of the government agencies, recently produced a report that severely criticized the Labor Department and the Bureau of Labor Statistics for the errors that it is promoting in its monthly reports. That's why economists don't pay much attention right now to the first Friday of the month reports by the Labor Department, Bureau of Labor Statistics, department on the unemployed and employed and so forth, other categories of employed, unemployed. They don't pay much attention to it anymore. They look at the Thursday weekly new claims for unemployment benefits. That comes out every Thursday. And that's the 20 million plus. That's the going up in 1 week from 1 million to 1.28 million. And we're going to see next week it'll go up even more. And then on December 26th, 12 million people will lose their benefits. Everybody who is on this PUA, you know, all the independent contractors, workers, the freelancers, the gig workers, and so forth. Yeah. Oh, but, you know, DoorDash raking into billions and billions, right? And all those investors raking into billions and billions for DoorDash, right? Why the DoorDash unemployed and the Ubers and the Lyfts and all the others lose their benefits. Okay, so that's just the jobs picture. Really deteriorating fast here, you know? And What about the other elements of the economy, the real economy, you know, not the stock market economy where the 1% get filthy rich day by day further, but the other, the rest of us? Well, we talked about the workers. How about renters? What's going on under renters? Well, there are 43 million rental units in the U.S. 43 million. 12.3 million are in what's called forbearance. Forbearance simply means you can forego paying your rent. Now, that doesn't mean that that rent doesn't have to be repaid sometime. Yeah, when the forbearance ends, you're going to have to pay up that back rent as well as your current rent. That was arranged in the CARES Act last March. So there's 12 million in forbearance. That ends January 1st. That ends, right? Other statistics show that 11.4 million renters are behind in their payments, averaging about $6,000. Okay, on top of how much of that is the forbearance and how much of that is people not in forbearance but just behind on their payments is not clear. You know, but the point is, you know, we got 10 to 20 million of the 43 million rental units either in forbearance or missed payments. Well, the missed payments people are about to get evicted, you see. They're about to get thrown out, and they're already being thrown out because, look, this rental, you know, moratorium on rent evictions only has applied since March, April, to renters in units that have funding from HUD, you know, the government agency, or FHA, you know, which is not all the rental units. So we're having evictions going on already, but the big flood will come after January 1st. Once again, 11.4 million behind, $6,000 on average, and their rents, and millions more, forbearance ending, and they got to start making double payments. That's a lot of people. Okay, well, what about mortgage forbearance? Mortgages. In other words, not renters, but people who own their homes. Well, there's 82 million single-family homes in the U.S., right? 49 million of those have mortgages, okay? So, you know, maybe what, 62%. Of the 82 million single-family homes have mortgages, you know, maybe 37-38% don't. They own their homes outright. Well, 3.6% of those who have mortgages, you know, 3.6 million, 8% of the 49 million with mortgages are also in forbearance. In other words, didn't have to pay their mortgages for economic reasons, and that back pay owed is backing up at their bank or mortgage servicer, and they're going to have to pay back that money, that back money too, in some way, you know, either partially every month, depends on how the bank wants to arrange it when they come off of forbearance. Well, they're coming off of forbearance too in the first quarter of this year. You know, it may not be January, it may be February, it depends. But certainly by March 1st, you know, the 3.6 million who have mortgages in forbearance are going to have to start paying that back as well as start paying their new regular payments as well. Okay. Another figure came out. 6.8% of all mortgages have missed payments. That's 5.5 million people have been missing payments. 3.6 million in forbearance, 5.5 million missing payments. And the estimate of the amount of missed payments is $751 billion in missed payments. Right? $751 billion.
a lot.
Okay, so that's a picture with forbearance, mortgages, and rents. It's a crisis picture, isn't it? And forbearance. Remember, forbearance means that they're going to have to start paying double come January. You have to pay back. Forbearance does not mean exemption. It does not mean that, you know, your rent's been expunged or your mortgage payments have been, you know, eliminated for this period of time. It just means that you're going to have to start paying it back again. And we're talking about almost $1 trillion here in rent forbearance, missed payments for rents, mortgage forbearance, missed payments for mortgages. Over $1 trillion just for housing. Just for housing. All right, I'm not through. Let's talk about student loans. Student loans, $1.7 trillion, right? Students own. 44 million students have student loans with an average balance of $36,000. Many of them over $100,000 if they went to grad school or something, right? 44 million. With a total owed of $1.7 million. 35 million of the 44 million are in forbearance. Just like renters, just like homeowners, they've suspended their payments since March. Doesn't mean that it's been expunged. They owe that money. They owe that principal that they owe, and, of course, the interest that they were paying. Both the principal and interest have been accumulating in a special category, deferred. They must start repaying that come January 1st as well. Yes. Well, how much is that forbearance that they're going to have to start paying again on top of starting their new payments? Well, I do some calculations, $36,000 average, $35 million in the forbearance, and what do you get? You get $777 billion back owed. Now, you add that to the $1 trillion in rent forbearance and mortgage forbearance and missed payments for rent and missed payments for mortgages. Add that $777, and you already got $1.5 trillion. Just to make people even, that they should and must come up with in a new stimulus package. Hold that number. You know, just forbearance and missed payments, $1.5 trillion. That would just bring people even for what they owe and haven't been able to pay for the last 8 months. I'm still not through. Look, here's another deferral that's coming up for payment here starting in January. Payroll tax deferral. You remember Trump when he walked out of negotiations with Pelosi and Schumer? He had his man there, Mnuchin and Meadows, walk out, break off negotiations last August. They suckered Pelosi and Schumer to come down $1 trillion on their proposal, no doubt signaling, well, we'll meet you halfway. And then they walked out. Yeah, bad faith bargaining. That's why Pelosi and Schumer don't trust them anymore and any of their offers, because it's all a scam. The Republicans and McConnell now are scamming the negotiations. They have no intention of bailing out people who really need it. All right, let's talk about payroll tax deferral. This is what Trump initiated in August. Four phony executive orders, right? And the big one here was the payroll tax deferral. What did he do? He said, well, I'm going to put more money in people's pockets so they can spend, and I'm going to defer your 6.2% on your wage, your gross wage of the payroll tax, you know, FICA, right? Goes into Social Security. I'm going to defer that 6.2%. You don't have to pay it for 4 months. It was only good through the end of this year, you see. And it affected workers with $2,000 a week and below gross pay. Right? Those who made more did not get deferred. Right? Now, the problem with that executive order was that employers collect payroll taxes from their workers, and they have to submit it to the Commerce Department, the government, every month. They pay 6.2% themselves, employers. That's the 12.4% that provides for Social Security. Now, the employers got deferred on their 6.2% way back in March. They've been deferring putting money into Social Security Trust Fund since March. Now, under the CARES Act, they were able to do that. But they must pay that back here by the end of 2021. It's only a deferral on the employer side, and it's just a deferral on the side of the workers here. So no money going into Social Security. And then they say, oh, it's a crisis, right? Yeah, well, you know, Obama did that too, but he made him pay it back over time after that. But Trump has been saying, oh, well, we're going to totally exempt you. You won't have to pay it back, employer or worker. Well, that's not going to happen. They're going to have to pay it back. The point I'm making is all those workers who got their payroll tax deferred since August are going to pay double payroll tax for the next 4 months starting in January. Double. Well, what kind of impact do you think that's going to have on consumption? Big impact. Now, a lot of employers say, hey, we're not going to go along with this, you know, because we got to collect this from our workers. And then who's going to do the deferral? What if the workers are laid off, right, and they're not around? Then the employer is going to have to pay that double share, that 6.2% for those who were deferred since August. You know, it's a bag of worms for the employer because they are legally responsible for paying that, whether they pay their 6.2 or their worker's 6.2. They can take it out of the worker's pay if the worker's there, but if the worker's not there, they got to pay it. So what's happened is many private employers opted out of this phony payroll tax deferral in August. I mean, big companies, you know, like GM, UPS, Costco, right? Private universities, health companies, big pharma, utilities, you know, FedEx, they opted out because they know it's a bag of worms. Who's participated in it? All the federal workers have had to participate in it. You know, you're talking about a couple million. And then there are 18 million state and local government workers. Many of them participated in it, but some states opted out. But many of the states participated. So it's mostly the public workers who are going to have to pay double here starting in January because the payroll tax deferral ends. Double payments, right? Yeah. Oh, I forgot to mention, you know, the employers, as I said, get to pay it back by the end of next December, 2021. However, the employers get a job retention tax credit and a deferral tax credit that they can use against this paying back the payroll tax. So even though they pay back the payroll tax, they reduce their other taxes by the amount in which they paid back the payroll tax. So they ended up neutral, you see. But the workers aren't going to get this kind of deal. They're just going to have to pay it out of pocket. How many billions and hundreds of billions of money here is going to be taken out of consumption as a result of paying? I don't have the figure because it's not complete yet, but we'll get it at some point. And if you're paying taxes, more taxes out of your paycheck, that means that that much is left for you to spend. What about small businesses? What's the picture with small businesses? Well, there's 30 million small businesses of various kinds in the United States. Already, the most conservative estimate I've seen is 3.3 million have closed permanently. 3.3 million. 110,000 restaurants have closed so far. You know, there's, according to Commerce Department, 660,000 restaurants in the U.S. So one out of seven have already closed. And that was as of the end of October. We've got tens of thousands, maybe 100,000 more that are closing this winter. And by the way, you know, those owners and their families and their workers will be unemployed. But the owners and their families won't be able to collect unemployment benefits. No. You know, they're not out of work looking for work, you see. They're not considered employees. They're owners. They're not eligible. Hundreds of thousands more. Small businesses, bars. We don't even know what the number is on bars here, right? I just gave you the number for restaurants. Out of 660,000, 110,000 restaurants closed so far as of the end of October. Hundreds of thousands, at least more, probably have closed or will close over the winter. Now, that's people without income that aren't going to consume in the first quarter of next year. And you know what makes this whole picture even more disgusting is the fact that the Trump administration has been sitting on $135 billion since August that was allotted, earmarked, to spend on bailing out small businesses. The PPP program, right, part of the CARES Act in March, April, you know, initially I think it was $350 billion allocated at the end of March to bail out small businesses. Well, a lot of the big businesses through their banking buddies scammed that program, what was supposed to go to small businesses. So they had to authorize another $300 billion, Congress did in April, to add to that. That's $670 billion for small businesses. Well, they only spent $525 billion of that. $135 billion is sitting there. And they're negotiating over how much to give small businesses here. They're just sitting on $135 billion that they won't spend, and they're negotiating over it. You know what they're going to do? They're going to use the $135 billion they haven't spent as part of their deal to bail out small businesses. Yeah, people aren't aware of that, you see. People aren't aware. Which brings us to the negotiations going on. What's happening here? What's happening? Well, in last week or so, we've seen an explosion of proposals. You know, there's the Pelosi-Schumer proposal going back to last May, called the HEROES Act. The HEROES Act provided $3.2 trillion of bailout and stimulus. It followed the CARES Act in March, April. The CARES Act, right, reportedly provided $3 trillion. Remember that? Well, I've talked about the CARES Act. On paper, it said $3 trillion, but they only actually spent maybe $1.3, $1.4 trillion of that. $500 billion of the CARES Act went to the $1,200 checks and the added unemployment benefits. Another $500 billion, $525, went to small business loans and grants. That's a little over $1 trillion, right? Maybe $200 billion went to hospitals and medical. Maybe $100 billion more miscellaneous here and there. So, you know, about $1.3, $1.4 trillion of the $3 trillion was spent. Well, what happened to the rest of that $3 trillion? Well, the rest was supposed to be spent by the Federal Reserve to bail out markets like asset-backed securities, and broker dealers and mutual funds, you know, these special markets and medium-sized businesses. They had a program of $600 billion that the Fed was supposed to stimulate to what called its Main Street program and medium-sized businesses. And it had another $500 billion that was supposed to bail out airlines and you know, Boeing and all the rest. So over $1 trillion was supposed to be used by the Fed. Money given from the CARES Act to the Federal Reserve from the Treasury, supposed to bail out medium and large businesses, wasn't used. Well, why not? Because it was supposed to be mostly in the form of loans, and big business didn't want to borrow the money. No. Sitting there on the Fed, they didn't want to borrow it. Why not? Because they didn't need it. And they knew they didn't need it. Why not? Because they were fat with cash already come March, April. And why were they fat with cash? Because Fed policies lowered the interest rates so low that these big corporations issued record level of corporate bonds. Record level of corporate bonds. How much? Well, for the Fortune 500 companies alone, $2 trillion in new bonds. That's raising money, cash. You know, the rates were so low because of the Fed generosity, the interest rates, right? They issued these bonds when they filled up their cash coffers with the money. They also filled up those cash coffers by borrowing down their credit lines with banks to the tune of $200-300 billion. They also fattened their cash coffers by suspending paying dividend payouts, which they do about $500 billion a year. They also fatten their cash coffers by, of course, laying off a lot of people and reducing operations and facilities costs and so forth. So they were floating in cash by March, April. They didn't want to borrow from the Fed, because the terms and conditions were, oh, they would have to use that to keep their workers employed. Right? They didn't want to do that. I mean, a good example was Boeing. Boeing, you know, just about broke, insolvent because of its problems, the crash in the travel industry, and before that, its problems with that 737 MAX airplane that won't fly. You know, they were in big trouble. Well, you know, that Fed $500 billion allocated $51 billion for Boeing to borrow to save it, and another 40-something billion for the other airlines to borrow. Did Boeing borrow the money? No. What did Boeing do? Well, it went into the bond markets and raised $25 billion, and then it laid off 14,000 workers. It would rather borrow money in bonds and lay off 14,000 workers than take the loan from the government, from the Fed, to save 14,000 workers' jobs. Yeah, that's what they'd rather do. Well, why did they do that? Well, they want to destroy the union up there in Seattle and move their operations to their non-union facilities in South Carolina. That's what that's all about. Well, they couldn't be so bad off, could they, if they didn't want to borrow the money?
Hello.
And, you know, you look at what's going on with the other airlines, it's the same thing. Yeah. Well, they've taken some money, $25 billion. But look, you know, the airlines in the previous 3 years distributed $45 billion to their shareholders in dividends. $45 billion. Just think, if they had kept that $45 billion, they wouldn't have to ask for loans. But that's the way the airlines work, you see. They got all these investors, and they're like banks. They just flush the money out as soon as they get it to those shareholders. Huh. Even today, airlines like Delta and Southwest are sitting on cash of billions of dollars and asking the government to bail us out. and they're hoarding billions in cash. Yeah. Remember, a couple months ago, airlines were really pressing the government. Oh, you know, we need that $25 billion bailout here, or we're going to lay off all these workers, right? They're sitting on billions of cash. That's how this system works, folks. Okay, so, you know, that $500 billion has really hardly been used. And the $600 billion for medium size, $500 billion for big corporations, the Fed sitting on, since the CARES Act, $1.1 trillion. How much has it used? Maybe $125 billion. That's it. And now Mnuchin says, okay, you know, you're not using it, and it expires at the end of this month, so we want the money back that you haven't used. And the Fed said, whoa, wait a minute. You know, we need this emergency because it looks like the economy is going to be worse next year. You know, we may need it for these financial markets eventually. But Mnuchin said, no, give it back. Give it back. And so Mnuchin is getting back from the Fed $455 billion that the Fed sitting on, because corporations won't borrow and need it, sitting on it, right? Is getting it back. $135 billion of that $455, of course, is unspent money for small business bailout, and the rest is for the larger companies. You see, you got to understand how the Fed works here a little bit. Oh, the Fed works, it gets money from the Treasury, right, that it uses as collateral to give to the banks, loan to the banks, and the banks, well, it does not just the banks anymore. It used to be that way. Now it loans to businesses as well, even junk bonds. And the idea is the amount that the Fed, you know, loans gives to the banks or so the businesses, they then use to spend or loan in a multiples of what they actually get from the Fed. It's called fractional reserve banking, you see. So when they say, okay, $1 trillion, the Fed's going to loan $1 trillion, you know, the Fed really only needs hundreds of billions, and it gives it to the banks, and the banks actually create the money supply multiple times over what they get from the Fed. Okay. So, you know, there's not really $1 trillion unspent in the Fed. It's hundreds of billions. And that's what the Fed has been forced to give back to the Treasury. Mnuchin, just a couple of weeks ago, give me back the $455 billion. Unprecedented. Never asked that. Well, they did. And, you know, Mitch McConnell really applauded that because his buddy Steve Mnuchin said, well, Mitch, this is what you have available, $455 billion, for your negotiations with the Democrats now. So Mitch McConnell's $500 billion saying that he will agree to in negotiations on the stimulus is really $500 billion that was passed back in March in the CARES Act, given to the Fed, now given back to the Treasury. He is negotiating to give the Democrats what they already negotiated and got back in March, April. Isn't that crazy? Yeah. He's not giving anything new in these negotiations. And you know, he's been at $500 billion since June. He will not budge. And it doesn't matter what the negotiations between Pelosi and the Trump administration have been or look like or continue to look like, because it's all a farce. The Republicans know that whatever they agree to with the Democrats has to be approved by Mitch McConnell, who says he's not going to approve it. So all these negotiations going on since August, July, August, between Pelosi, Schumer on one hand and Trump, Meadows, and Mnuchin on the other is just a shell game. General people, populists don't understand that. It's the hard cop, soft cop strategy of the Republicans. Soft cop, you know, back in August. Oh, we'll agree to $1.8 trillion if you come down, Nancy. Yeah. Well, okay. Nancy fell for that, came down a trillion. She thought they were on about a deal. And then, as I said before, Meadows Mnuchin walked out, sandbagged him. And then immediately, within 24 hours, Trump came up with his four phony executive orders that I described. Immediately. And then negotiations continued in September and October. And in October, Trump refloated the offer of $1.8 trillion without defining what it was. Just threw a number out there. It was just a campaign tactic, an election tactic. Well, this time, Pelosi and Schumer didn't fall for it, right? They knew it was just bullshit. They didn't fall for it, to their credit. Because behind it was $500 billion. That was it. $500 billion they already negotiated in March. That's all that Mnuchin McConnell would agree to. $500 billion. Yeah. Well, okay, after the election, what do we got here in negotiations? Well, McConnell's still at $500 billion. And new on the scene is this group of eight, quote, bipartisan senators, conservative Democrats, and, middle-of-the-road Republicans, trying to get together, and they come up with another proposal, $908 billion, which, by the way, has no checks, no supplemental checks to it, and half of the unemployment benefits. That's it. And other elements to it, reduced amount. I think it's like $180 billion for benefits and $160 billion for state and local governments, which, by the way, are going broke and laying off workers by the tune already of hundreds of thousands a month. So this idea that the state and local governments don't need it is also bullshit, Republican bullshit. They're laying people off in the hundreds of thousands at a time when they have to step up and implement, the vaccine and all the other expenses. Yeah. So $908 billion, try to be a compromise. Try to suck Pelosi down from the $2.2 trillion, another $1 trillion, you see? That's what that maneuver is. That's the corporate wing of the Democratic Party blocking with the Republican moderates to try to bring down the Democrat Pelosi-Schumer proposal closer to McConnell's $500 billion. Well, Pelosi came out and said, oh, okay, we're going to use $908 billion as the base from which to negotiate up. Well, McConnell said, no, that's a ceiling to negotiate down. And then McConnell floats this thing. Well, I wanted this eliminate corporate business liability. Don't sue any companies because they didn't provide PPE for their workers and some of them died. We want to give them blanket exemption, legal exemption here. That's been, McConnell's proposal all along. He says, I will give that up if you, the Democrats, give up money for state and local government. Yeah. Well, there's a lot of other things on the table that he hasn't agreed to, like checks. And his proposal of $500 billion is only to extend, a bailout for 30 days until the end of January. By the way, the $908 billion is only for three more months. In other words, it's a mitigation. It's buying time. It's not a stimulus. And as I said at the beginning of the show, we got all this income coming out, or people are going to have to use what income they have to pay all this back rent and pay all this back mortgages and student loans and so forth, which is going to take money out. It's going to take money out of the consumption and the economy come January. That's why J.P. Morgan Chase Bank has predicted we're going to slip into a double-dip recession in January to March. We're going down again. Yeah, and they're coming up with a 30-day mitigation with no checks, with half unemployment benefits, and no solution to the rent and mortgage and student forbearance. That's what this is about, you see, and nothing for state and local governments. Yeah, well, that's the lineup. You know, you got McConnell at $500 billion, who's threatening now to walk out. You got Pelosi at somewhere above $908 billion. You got the Group of Eight with $908 billion. And I think Mnuchin came out on part of Trump and says $916 billion, right? They're trying to bring everything down to $900 billion or below. That will not make up for the $2 to $3 trillion in forbearance and unemployment and all the other hits that are going to start in January of this next year. Won't make up for it. Won't even cover it. You know, they want a $600, $700 billion at most for 30, 60, 90 days. Won't even begin to chip away at the tip of the iceberg of the economic crisis that's around the corner. Okay, that's the status of negotiations. And, you know, I think Pelosi and Schumer are going to cave in. I think that's going to happen. And how much, I don't know. And they'll be saying their excuse, well, you already hear it from Biden. Biden's pushing them too. You already hear it from Biden saying, oh, you know, let's take what's on the table now and we'll come back, you know, after January 20th and negotiate some more. That's the biggest bullshit line I've heard yet. Because if the Democrats don't win both seats in Georgia, McConnell will remain in control of the Senate. And you think he's going to be any different, negating everything that comes his way, than he has been for the last 10 years? No, no. He wants to make the Democrats look bad. He wants Biden to fail. And in 2022, they take over the House, the Trump Republicans. And then you know where we are, right? Control of the Senate and the House and the Supreme Court. Guess. And even if the Democrats, by a long shot, win both seats in Georgia, I don't see Biden coming out aggressively and engaging in a stimulus, major stimulus package that's needed to rescue this economy in time for the Democrats to survive 2022. It's going to be an Obamanomics 2.0, even weaker than Obama's stimulus, which failed for everybody but the bankers and big corporations, which created a crisis for 6 years, which generated all of this antagonism towards government, which led to Trump in 2016. You see, the economic crisis was not really deep enough. The recovery from the crisis was not really shared deeply enough throughout the economy. And it generated a lot of the opposition and brought Trump to power in 2016. Well, if Biden doesn't come up with something manyfold more stimulus than Obama did, you know, and Obama was only a $787 billion package. Most of it, you know, $300 billion of it was tax cuts, $300 billion went to the states. So it was a very weak recovery package in 2009, although the Federal Reserve bailed out the banks to the tune of $4 trillion, you see. The Fed bails out the banks and the investors. The rest of us have to engage in this farce of negotiations in Congress to get, you know, even crumbs. That's the way the system is set up, you see. Yeah. So, you know, I don't think Biden, bottom line here, even if they win the two seats in Georgia, which are unlikely, even if they win, I don't think you're going to see a necessary stimulus that will be required, you know, with all this forbearance ending and with 20 million jobs still unemployed and maybe even more by then, with all these small business having closed, so forth. We need $2 to $3 trillion stimulus come January. Well, that was the HEROES Act, right? Of last May, $2 to $3 trillion. But they're not going to pass it. Biden will not pass it because look who he's putting into his administration, all corporate Obama admin retreads. Yeah. You know, Bernie Sanders and Warren, they've been squeezed out, haven't they? Yeah, Bernie, you know, your whole strategy of inside outside, total failure. You know, they scuttled you in South Carolina like they did in 2016. Then you said in May, well, let's go to the convention here and get the platform, you know, to reflect progressive values. Let's go fight there. In the meantime, support Joe. And they went to fight there and they lost. They got kicked out, you know, and then Bernie says, well, we got to get Biden elected and then we'll get appointed to some of these cabinet positions and we'll do something there. Well, you've just been squeezed out of that. How many times do you think you can try to reform the Democratic Party? Inside outside strategy, Sanders strategy, total failure. And we're seeing that now with the appointments. Bidenomics will be Obamanomics 2.0 and will not be sufficient to stimulate the economy in 2021, given all that I described at the beginning of this show that's coming, that's happening now, and that's coming even worse in January. Well, I didn't get time to talk about Trump's latest ploy here, but basically, let me just summarize 25 words or less. I think what he's trying to do is to cause so much confusion in the Electoral College that the Electoral College does not report out its results, its final results, and therefore allows Trump and his lawyers to go to the Supreme Court and say, Supreme Court, you've got to throw this election into the U.S. House of Representatives. And if that happens, then each state gets one vote in the House based on you know, who controls their legislatures. And guess who controls the more legislatures in the states than the Democrats and Republicans? They have 27 states. So it will be a 27-23 vote in the House, if it goes there on January 6th, for Trump. Now, whether he gets that far will remain to see, but that's his final shot. That's where he's going. Throw it into the House. Stop the Electoral College reporting out. Throw it into the House of Representatives, and maybe he'll get reelected that way. It's a long shot, but we'll see what happens. Anyway, the political crisis goes on. The economic crisis gets bigger. And, of course, the COVID crisis is now escalating beyond all expectations. The triple crisis worsens. All right. I'm sure we'll have something more definitive next week on the stimulus settlement, because that's all they've got. One more week.